This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Abortion access, once a right, is now a patchwork. From Marketplace, I'm Sabri Benishor, in for David Brancaccio. The Supreme Court's decision to overturn Roe v. Wade and hand control over abortion to the states means access to the procedure will be uneven in the United States, uneven across geography, and uneven across income levels. Someone wanting an abortion may not be able to afford to travel to get one. Lina Maria Murillo is an assistant professor of gender, women's, and sexuality studies at the University of Iowa. She spoke with Marketplace's Nancy Marshall Genzer about the changing landscape of abortion access.
Good morning, Professor Murillo. I should say you're joining us from a coffee shop.
Yes, thank you so much. I appreciate your patience. I'm in northernmost Wisconsin with my family on a camping trip.
Well, thank you for interrupting your vacation for us.
Well, the Supreme Court had other plans for me last week.
What does abortion access look like right now in the various states?
I'm currently living in the Midwest. I live in Iowa. You know, I'm visiting in Wisconsin. Wisconsin is no longer offering abortion care. Neighboring Minnesota is. Illinois, as well, is continuing to offer abortion care. In Iowa, there is a 24-hour waiting period in effect, which will likely turn into an all-out ban. And so we're beginning to already see the way that the map is creating these corridors of care and producing these internal borders for denial of access to care. And so you're also going to see movement into Canada and likely people traveling down to Mexico for abortion care.
For people who are not able to access abortion, could this decision send the mortality rate higher?
In a country that has fought vehemently against universal health care, our maternal mortality rates are some of the worst in the industrialized world. Forcing birth is only going to make that worse because at this particular moment, there is no commitment by any politician to strengthen our safety nets, right? Especially when it comes to health.
And teenagers could have real problems. The American Academy of Pediatrics, in fact, issued a statement saying the Supreme Court decision will have what it calls grave consequences for their adolescent patients because they face more barriers than adults in accessing reproductive health care services and abortion. So how could they be affected economically?
All people who become pregnant who do not want to be, right, getting denied access to an abortion is essentially pushing them deeper into poverty. Now, when we're talking about children, you're compounding already folks who are not always able to consent for themselves. And so you're essentially cutting them off from making major decisions about their future. And a lot of the laws that are going to be coming on the books are incredibly cruel. They make no exception for incest, for instance, or rape. And so you're going to see a lot of very young people being forced to give birth.
That was Lina Maria Murillo, assistant professor at the University of Iowa and author of the forthcoming book, Fighting for Control, Power, Reproductive Care, and Race in the U.S.-Mexico Borderlands. Thanks so much for joining us.
Absolutely. Thank you, Nancy.
Our economy is undergoing two major changes simultaneously. One, it appears inflation may start to lessen in the coming months. Energy prices have fallen, food prices may ease. Two, there are signs the economy itself is slowing down, especially in housing. Dr. David Kelly, chief global strategist for JP Morgan Funds, says the timing of these slowdowns is important.
If inflation rolls over first, then the Federal Reserve can sort of breathe a sigh of relief and ease off on raising interest rates, and that'll help bring mortgage rates down a bit. It'll help probably bring the dollar down a bit, and that could sustain the economy growing into 2023. But if inflation stays really hot and growth slows down first, then everybody's going to yell stagflation. But the Federal Reserve is going to, you know, grit its teeth and keep raising interest rates, and then we could well have a recession. So, you know, if you want to make a bet on the horse race, you know, please bet that inflation slows down first, you know, rather than growth, because we really need it to work out that way in order for the economy to stay healthy into 2023.
That's David Kelly with J.P. Morgan Funds. Jobs in the energy sector, especially in areas like electrified cars, are growing rapidly, faster than overall job growth last year. That is according to the Department of Energy. One area, though, that lost jobs, fossil fuel production. Marketplace's Nova Sappho has more on that.
The Energy Department's report shows a shift toward the electrified future taking hold in the energy sector, which added more than 300,000 jobs last year, making it one of the fastest growing job markets. There were sizable gains in the manufacture of hybrid and fully electric cars and car parts. The only job losses were in fuels, including petroleum and coal, which together lost more than 35,000 jobs. The report does not cover the time period following Russia's invasion of Ukraine, which saw seismic shifts in global energy prices. And it precedes the infrastructure law, with billions of dollars in new clean energy investments. I'm Nova Sappho for Marketplace.
Executive leadership at major U.S. companies is less bipartisan than it used to be. That's according to a new paper in the National Bureau of Economic Research, which looked at the party registration trends among executives at publicly listed companies since 2008. Marketplace's Matt Levin has more.
Starting around 2015, it became much less likely to see a Democratic CEO working alongside a Republican CFO.
Executive teams have become more partisan. We like to match with other like-minded individuals.
Elizabeth Kemp is a professor at the University of Chicago and a co-author of the paper. Kemp says shared political values at the top can be positive. Consensus may be easier to reach. But she says there's downsides when the company leadership all comes from the same part of the political spectrum.
You might also maybe not hire somebody that's actually the best fit for the job.
And instead hire somebody who voted the way you did. Executives are also under more political scrutiny from consumers and employees, says Costas Panagopoulos at Northeastern University.
Average citizens are now looking to corporations to engage politically and apply pressure on politicians.
He doesn't see that trend ending anytime soon. I'm Matt Levin for Marketplace.
And in New York, I'm Sabri Benishore with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.